Hello and welcome to All You Ever Wanted to Know. I'm Jordan Patswold. Today, it's the, well, what we're calling the last Friday of the month with Heart to Heart with David Disty. In reality, the last Friday of the month is next week, but because of Good Friday, we will not be having All You Ever Wanted to Know on the air. So we've pushed up David's monthly appearance to today. David, great to chat with you.
Good to be back, Jordan. Thank you.
Well, for starters, we want to give a bit of a warning before we begin today's show. Today's topic is going to be rather sensitive for the little ears. It might be particularly what would be the right word? I guess listeners' discretion is encouraged for the parents tuned in today. Serious topic in the form of talking about self-harm and harm reduction strategies. So we want to put that out there right from the get-go today as we begin our program. And good to get that in place there. If you have to listen or not listen just because of the little ears you don't want around, not to worry. This will be posted on our Rock 98.5 website if you have the time later to listen, if you feel it's a topic that you really want to give a listen to. David, let's dive right on in and I guess with the conversation that we're going to be talking about today. So
we're going to be talking about self-harm. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different ideas that people have about self-harm. Ideas that maybe this is the same thing as a suicide attempt, or maybe it is a lot of people believe self-harm is just cutting, or that it's there's a lot of different beliefs out there about self-harm. So I just want to kind of talk about what is self-harm and what can be done about it, and what's a good way for somebody who is either engaging in self-harm behaviors or a friend or family member who mm-hmm. is wanting to help someone else.
Now, for you as well as a counselor, is this something that you can help someone out with, like talking them through why are you doing this, a family member concerned for a loved one? I guess you can approach it from different angles as a counselor.
Yep, as a counselor, absolutely. If there is someone that you know of who is engaging in self-harm, counseling definitely can help. There's a lot that you can do with a counselor to help deal with what is causing the self-harm.
Now, much like anything, though, it really comes down to that individual really wanting to put themselves into counseling. You can't force someone in to come see you. Likely you won't have great results when that sort of thing happens.
Yeah, you can strongly encourage someone and help get them there. But yeah, the person does need to want to make the change. But with that, the self-harm, it's not there because it's something bad that they want to be doing, but it's there because it's something that they don't know how to deal with the issue in another way. So it's there as a coping mechanism for something else. So the person very likely doesn't want to be hurting themselves, but they don't know what else to do. So if you approach it with them that, hey, you don't have to be doing this. There is other things that you can do instead of hurting yourself to deal with the pain that you're in.
Yeah. And lots of perceptions, I know, are out there too in regards to why someone does it. I know, the suicidal thing does come up often with it. Something like the cutting or anything really that could be hazardous to one's health, like intentionally deteriorating the body. Heck, even self-harm could, even in a mental way, just constantly someone beating themselves up for a decision they made or a decision they made repeatedly, beating themselves over of it, even just mentally, it can be a form of self-harm.
Yeah, and there's a ton of different things that can be self-harm. And it's important to look at there's these behaviors that can be self-harm, but they can be something else as well. So like with cutting, it can be self-harm or it can be a suicide attempt. So it's important to see not just the behavior, but then to kind of figure out what's behind it. So other things like we think of self-harm as something that girls do, guys don't do it, but there's other things that guys do, getting into fights, punching walls. Those things can be a form of self-harm. It could be something else that's going on inside them, but it can be self-harm as well. Also, substance use, that can be an addiction or it can be serving purpose of self-harm. So opening it up to looking at what is the person doing, not just looking at cutting, but tons of other things that they could be doing. I sometimes hesitate to talk about all the different ways because I don't want to be giving people ideas. But for parents that are out there listening, look for not just what is the, if it is a youth that you're concerned about what they're doing, look for not just are they cutting themselves, but are they doing something else to harm themselves? Ingesting poisons is something laundry soap is something that some people do. It causes that pain that can do something for them. So there's a lot of different things to keep your eyes open for, and don't just assume that it is self-harm or that it's something else, but really look to figure out what's behind it. Because like I said, cutting can be a suicide attempt or can be self-harm.
Yeah.
Substance use can be addiction or self-harm. Fighting can be an anger issue or self-harm. So yeah, looking what's behind it is a very important piece.
Society's come a long ways, even in more recent years, talking about how people can get help mentally for themselves and going about it that way. I know there were maybe the perception previously, or some people may hold on to, where something like self-harming, oh, you're just doing that for attention, as an example. And obviously, we've taken a few steps to... Yeah, there might be that case, but we got to make sure it's not something that's deeper and worse, because it's a very dangerous way for someone to attention seek, if you will, when we're talking about injury they could cause to themselves.
And I think anytime we were tempted to say they're just looking for attention, well, why are they looking for attention?
Yeah.
Everybody needs attention. So is it bad to seek attention? That's not a good way to seek attention, but everybody needs that connection in some form or another. So if they are seeking attention, let's give it to them and help them to go about it in a better way.
Well, and it's like what we've talked about, too, with I know other parenting experts on this show, where we talk about our toddlers, for example, that we both have, right?
Yep.
And the things that they'll go to, what lengths they will, just to get our attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than just telling them, no, don't do that. It's so much more. It's about, well, hey, mom, dad, get off your phone. Pay attention to your young one. Give them the opportunity to be successful. Really try and open up communication, because often a lot of the time it is a plea for, hey, pay attention to me.
Yeah, look, everybody.
Me. And there's nothing, like you say, wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's just
everybody needs that positive interaction,
has.
Whether it is a youth who is doing some self-harm behavior, a toddler who is acting out to get your attention, a spouse who wants that intimacy but doesn't know how else to get that attention from you. Yeah, everybody needs it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, we talked a little bit about the different types of self-harm that are out there. The things that people think about, it's often we think, well, it's something, it's an addiction, it's a suicide attempt, but what else is behind it? And there's some forms of self-harm that we engage in that people don't worry about or don't think about the same. Things like tattooing. Again, I'm not saying that it is always self-harm, but can it be a type of self-harm where you people talk about getting a good feeling from that tattooing, because the body gives out chemicals when we're in pain and it feels good. That's kind of what some people who engage in self-harm are doing. They're looking for that chemical rush that kind of relieves them from the mental pain. I've heard some people talk about it as when a person cuts, the mental pain comes out physically. That's the only way that they've found to get the mental pain out, is to get it out physically. And so then when we're working with someone who does these self-harm behaviors, we're looking at how else can we deal with the mental pain. And there's a wide variety of things that we can do to help someone find a different way to let out that mental pain, rather than cutting or punching something or any of the other ways of self-harm that we've talked about.
Often is a great concern for a parent, and a troubling reality that can really be pressed upon them, and it can in itself cause just a lot of parents to just freak out, man, how do I approach this? Mm-hmm. It's very stressful in that way, because of just the thoughts just rush into their head. Is this something I did that caused them to want to do this? Is it something going on at school, as an example? Is it grades? Is it the future?
Yeah.
There's so much that can play into it. And often a parent, it's so hard even just for them to really take this head on. If it's, say, for example, their child who's doing this, they're going through their own process too here of like, oh my goodness, like what is causing this? And more often than not, when there is a confrontation, I guess the TV shows will tell us, well, that kid's going to run straight to their room, lock the door, and Who yeah. knows what's going to happen behind those doors?
Mm-hmm.
Society's kind of painted a picture of what it's probably going to be like, and often scares someone from even wanting to do anything about it in some ways, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, and we don't want to take a kind of passive stance and say, well, there's nothing I can do, but to be proactive and build that relationship. So the stronger your relationship with your kid or the friend who is doing these things, the easier it is to have that conversation. So to be building that relationship, even if your youth isn't engaging in self-harm or you've got younger children who aren't doing that,
mm-hmm.
Building that relationship now so that when these tough things come up down the road, and there will be tough things that come up down the road, not just self-harm, but lots of other stuff. So when these things come up, then you can have that good conversation, and the youth or the child knows, you know what, mom or dad's got my back. I know they're in this to help me. They're not going to freak out. They're not going to punish me. They're going to want to help me. And when a child or youth knows that their parent is in their corner, then it's far easier for them to stay in that conversation, be honest and open, and do what needs to happen in order to find a different way to deal with the pain.
Mm-hmm. It's all you ever wanted to know today, Heart to Heart with David Disty. If you'd like to ask David any questions today on the program, the lines are open, 306-783-5160. We do our best to keep things anonymous, so if you call, we won't be asking any names or anything like that. Just call us up and we'll take your call. 306-783-5160. Again, a sensitive topic today in harm and self-harm and harm reduction strategies for that matter today on the program. We'll take a quick break, but we'll be back on All You Ever Wanted to Know, Heart to Heart, after this. We're back here on All You Ever Wanted to Know, Heart to Heart, with David Disty again. Just a parental note, if you're listening with little ones, it could be a tough topic to have on the radio today. We're talking about self-harm and harm reduction today on the program with David, Heart to Heart. And now going back into our conversation, I know the perception is, by and large, something like self-harm, it's something that teenagers, for example, the ones mm-hmm. in those high school years, it might be something that's more prone in their age demographic, but really the stats show, no, this is really much more than just young people.
It is much more than young people. And I think one of the great books that kind of opened my eyes to how it can be more than just young people was Romeo Dallaire's book, Waiting for First Light. And that talks about his time, not just in Rwanda, but then how that trauma affected him for years later. And one of the things that he talks about in there is not just addiction, but the trauma led him also to cutting himself as one of the only ways that he could, like I said before, get that mental pain out, and it could just come out as physical pain. We see that with youth and young adults. And we see that with all other ages too. It can be related to trauma, or it can be related to not knowing how else to deal with the emotions that come out of everyday life, or something that's kind of come out of left field for you.
It's often so very hard for someone to try and, well, I think the reason I was about to throw the word confront out there. That's often part of the problem, is that if you're going about it in a confrontational kind of way, you're probably not going to have success when talking with a friend or your child or just anyone like that, your partner even potentially.
Yep.
If you go about it in a confrontational kind of way, it's not going to probably go well. Do you have tips for someone, I guess, approaching someone?
If you go about it confrontationally, the person who is engaging in self-harm behavior, they're doing it because they don't know what else to do. They're overwhelmed with what's going on inside them. And so if you're confronting them, going about it in a confrontational way, like you said, then you're possibly adding to that sense of being overwhelmed and not knowing what to do.
Right.
Going at it in a supportive role rather than, you got to stop this. Going at it and looking at why is this happening and what do you need from me to help? So some people will, if someone's cut, they'll go through and search for anything that could be used to harm themselves. And that can help, but there's always more ways for someone to find a way to harm themselves. So, yeah, get rid of or lock up things that could be used to harm themselves. But I think it's just as important or more important to help the individual to gain those skills, to heal from the trauma, whatever it is, to help them to bring their emotional level down to a manageable place.
I find so much of life's frustrations honestly come down to often one bracket, and it's lack of communication. And it can be the communication that someone has with their spouse, for example, that can cause a lot of stress or anxiety on a marriage, for example. But then oftentimes, though, too, when it's someone who's potentially self-harming, it's just that, yeah, they feel like they're alone, they're lost, they have no one that they can turn to, because that's just the way life has put themselves in. And so, like, yeah, when you talk about how you can't go about it confrontationally because you're just leaving that person on their island even more, it seems like. But showing those signs of sympathy or even empathy goes a long way too.
Yeah. And I guess if we're going at it in a confrontational way, then that's saying that, you know what, you know better, you can do better, just stop. And that's not the case with someone who is harming themselves. Earlier, I guess last year, we had Ross Green on here, and his catchphrase is kids do well when they can do well. And I extend that out to everybody does the best with what they can. They do well if they can do well. And a person who is harming themselves, they're doing it not because they think, hey, this is fun, but they're doing it because they don't know what else to do. So if we go about it in talking to the person, looking at it and saying, you know what skill are you lacking here? What's going on in your world that is making you think this is the best way to approach the situation? So then we can build those skills. Like in counseling, we can work on building those skills to manage the emotions that are going on. We can work on dealing with a situation. So if it is a person's overwhelmed because of bullying at school, we can deal with that. If it's a person is overwhelmed with their parents separating, we can work with that. If it's a person just hasn't developed the skills to manage their emotions, we can build those skills.
Well, and also developing healthier ways of releasing frustration, mental pain, for example, deflecting it into another form as opposed to pressing oneself into a physical harm type situation, whether it's like a headbang or punching a wall. It's interesting that those are included in there too, because some people are like, oh, I'm just releasing some stress or having a couple of drinks. I'm just releasing the stress that is built up. But really, when you're just bringing down another part of your body, you're not approaching it in the right kind of way.
And there's nothing to say that maybe hitting a punching bag is bad, because there are times like going to a martial arts class can really help, because there's that focus, there's that attention to detail, that focus on what you're doing physically. So it's not that hitting a punching bag is bad, but if that is your only way of dealing with the stress, the only way of dealing with the emotions, then yeah, maybe we can expand that, your repertoire, your toolbox.
So like you say, oftentimes it's a coping mechanism for folks to deal with the stresses of life. But when it comes to, let's see here, what I was just trying to say in my train of thought, I guess what's so important to get people is back on just dealing with healthier ways to deal with some of this pain that they're going through, just because oftentimes it may be like in the form of an alcohol addiction, as an example. If someone's using it to numb the pain, if you will, often what has to happen is that it'll get worse and worse and worse, where, you know, one drink, as an example, would have calmed someone down. Then it becomes two. Then it has to become three, because then the two isn't doing enough. Likewise, the harming of, say, you know, a mild punch to a punching bag. Well, now it's a full-on punch square into a wall, even a hole. Like, that's why I guess it's so important to make sure that someone can address what's going on with them the sooner, because otherwise, if we get to deeper and deeper levels. That's where something, maybe if it is in the realm of someone not trying to hurt themselves, well, it gets to such a level where it does reach that point where it's an overdose in terms of alcohol or drugs, for example, to numb these pains. That's where, you know, someone dealing it in their own way, it could prove to be very costly.
Absolutely. So yeah, you mentioned like one drink turns into two, three, four, and then it kind of snowballs. So then it becomes not just about the self-harm, but it goes into addiction, and it goes into, there's other stressors that are added on because you got a DUI, and then the marriage is breaking down, and there's all these other things. So yeah, again, I think I say it pretty much every time I'm here, but the sooner you deal with this, the better, because you don't want it to snowball. And you mentioned a little bit ago about doing things that are less harmful. And I think that, yeah, sometimes people do things that still have the same physical effect, but are less harmful. And so like someone who is cutting, they can sometimes use it as a step where they'll like put an elastic band on their wrist, and instead of cutting, they'll snap the elastic band, which doesn't cause, cause a risk for suicide, and it doesn't leave scars, but it's still kind of getting you that physical release that you look for in a way. Mm-hmm. And then I see that as kind of a stepping stone, that we don't want to stay there where you have to have an elastic band on your wrist forever, but to get to a place that, okay, now I don't have to cut myself. What do I need to do to bring the emotions down so that I don't have to have the elastic band either?
Right.
Because we want to be able to deal with these things completely, I was going to say completely in ourselves, but without these external aids, we want to be able to deal with it in community and in our own minds and bodies.
Well, and finding the right outlet, like you say, that's what it really comes down to. A lot of people, they need, as an example, like a stressed out mother, for example, I just need time for myself.
Yeah.
That can be healing in itself. A guy or girl, for that matter, playing a round of golf, going for a walk, just in the peacefulness of it all, right? Just being able to deal about the stresses in life a lot of the time, in just a much healthier way.
Yeah. And a lot of the things that you can do that are healthier, they get the same chemical reaction in your body. So like people know about a runner's high, you go for a run and it feels good because your body's giving you all these chemicals that make you feel good. Mm-hmm. It's the same chemical reaction as when someone cuts themselves. So if you can do these things that are good for your body and they give you that good feeling, whether it be going and playing a sport, but be careful that you're not playing the sport so you can get into a fight there or something, because then you're back in the self-harm. Whether it be, going for a run, going and playing a sport, just being outside, something like that that gives you the same chemical response as the self-harm, it can be really good in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, as well, going to see the doctor goes such a long way, too, with getting help in this regard as well. And often when it's... even when there's an early sign of something like that, that a parent maybe observes, for example, or someone worried about themselves, just because, the sooner one can take care of themselves, the more that someone can do for you ultimately, too, and help you out in the long run.
There's so much stuff that a doctor can do to help you, whether it be sleeping medication so that you're not up all night kind of with your thoughts racing and don't know what else to do with them, whether it be an antidepressant so that you're not feeling as anxious or depressed throughout the day, whether it be an assessment for ADD, because we know that people with ADD tend to have more difficulty regulating their emotions. So there might be a variety of things that a doctor can do to help deal with what is leading to the self-harm.
Well, and as well, for someone to really get the message when someone's calling out for help, to be able to help them in such a way. Like, it would be amazing if we could go to being able to be so observant in noticing something's wrong with someone that it doesn't take something like a trip to the emergency room, for example.
Yeah. And noticing something's wrong, and it can be a variety of things. Like we said, the addiction can be a piece. Cutting, we didn't mention eating disorders, but that can be a type of self-harm too, that you feel, I'm not worth it. I need to punish myself. So there's a side of managing emotions, and there's a side of sometimes it's about feeling that I deserve punishment and nobody will do it except for me. So there we go.
Yeah.
In both those realms, to look at to be aware of what's going on in other people's lives and seeing, well, what are they doing? Do we notice that when they are emotionally, trying to think of the lay term, dysregulated, when they're not dealing with their emotions well, are they going out by themselves? Are they doing things that aren't good?
Then our phone number, 306-783-5160, if you want to talk about anything we've been discussing today on Heart to Heart with David Disty, talking today, again, self-harm and harm reduction on the program. We'll be back after a short commercial break today on All You Ever Wanted to Know. We're back here on All You Ever Wanted to Know. Today, talking with David Disty. It's Heart to Heart, a rather serious topic. So again, for the sensitive ears, again, talking about self-harm, but also harm reduction. And very important to make sure people know that if there is a loved one who is engaging in this kind of behavior, there is that point where, sometimes there's no other option. You need to get them to the hospital. Mm-hmm. We can't just be worried about what the Joneses are going to think down the street when they find out that my child or my friend or my spouse is engaging in this kind of behavior. We need to be looking out for these loved ones. And hey, just like any other health condition, the hospital sometime is the place that you need to be headed to.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about a variety of different types of self-harm, and they all present differently, and there'd be different reasons for going to the hospital. So if there's an eating disorder that's part of self-harm, then to be seeing a doctor regularly and making sure that the body is not deteriorating. If it is through cutting, then if the bleeding can't be controlled, or if there's stitches that are needed, then you gotta go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. If the person expresses thoughts of suicide, then absolutely go to the hospital, or if you can, to a mental health practitioner right away. But that needs to be addressed immediately. Same thing with addiction. If there is overdose happening, then I guess the same, you go to the hospital for self-harm the same as you would if it wasn't self-harm. If there is bleeding that can't be controlled, if there's an overdose, if there is risk to someone that can't be managed where you are, then seek medical help.
Well, and there's an extra step too, where this goes a bit further as well, in terms of when someone is self-harming with the intent of something like suicide, because I know, for an example, if someone's being examined at home, like in an emergency type situation, paramedics will come and they will ask, well, you know, this is now up to, like, are we going to the hospital or aren't we, kind of thing, right? That person's able to answer that question, if you will. But this is, I know, a circumstance where there's people out there in terms of counselors, social workers, people like that, where if they are informed by a client or someone like that, that there is suicidal thoughts, that with that, you have to go forward and, you know, relay that on to getting that person help right away.
Counselors are trained to assess suicide risk, and depending on the risk, hospitalization might be needed, or the counselor might be able to deal with it there and kind of develop a contract that, you know what, you'll be here again on X day, and here's your safety plan, here's what you can do, and kind of contract that you won't harm yourself before you see me again next. A mental health practitioner will be trained in how to assess the suicide risk too.
Well, and I notice it now, even at the hospital, for example, they're now being a lot more aware of, getting an understanding of what people are feeling like mentally. Mm-hmm. I can recall there was some stuff I was dealing with just myself, where I just felt like every last part of me was broken. And so when I went to the hospital because something had happened and I had fallen and I was worried that, you know, something had maybe broken in that regard, just through the course of the triage asking me in the question, so have you felt depressed or, you know, just mentally unwell in the last couple of weeks? It's like, well, to be honest with you, it's been a rough go. And then they ask the step further to the point of like suicidal thoughts or something like that. I'm like, well, it's been rough, but it hasn't been that rough. But again, they're now engaging in that more and more, even though, hey, I didn't come to the hospital concerned for my mental well-being, but yet the checks being in place there too to really give people that safe environment to ask them in that moment, hey, you know, how are you feeling in that regard in your life? And is this causing serious pain to yourself?
And asking about suicide isn't something that's just for mental health professionals or medical professionals, but for everybody to be aware of. And a lot of the time we've been so hesitant to say the word suicide or to talk about it. But for someone who is thinking about suicide, we need to be really upfront and open and honest and say, hey, let's not beat around the bush with this, but have you been thinking about suicide? Because if you're not upfront and come right out with it and say suicide, then a lot of times the person that you're working with might not tell you, and then you don't know what's going on. So yeah, for everybody to be upfront and honest and able to talk about suicide is, I think, an important step in our society.
Well, and the trip to the hospital, though, too, I know as well, they're being a lot more careful too with people when they come in. And say, for example, if I had answered yes to that question, that it doesn't just like, okay, boom, getting you through like, okay, get this person on 50 cc's of this, and then they got to do this and that.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's more of a, it's not just confronting it all in like one big like shot, if you will. It's just someone answered yes to that question, but making sure that that person does get those steps in the right place to get the help that they need, that it's not just all thrust upon them in that second after they answer yes to that question, for example.
Yeah, there's a whole kind of scale, for lack of a better word, of suicidal thoughts. So, yeah, and then they'll go through and do a proper assessment, evaluation of what is the risk and how do we best deal with it. So, yeah, it's not, you don't say yes and they'll throw you straight in a straitjacket, but yeah, they'll make the right assessment there.
And the reason why they do that too is that they don't want to create like a trauma-like situation.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, sometimes if someone overreacts, that can be bad as well, but you definitely don't want to underreact too.
And then important to, with someone, now at the hospital example, communicating to them, it can be really tricky and letting them know, hey, this is why what you're doing is being treated so seriously, that these are really dangerous things that you are doing to yourself.
Yeah, physically dangerous, and I wouldn't say mentally dangerous, but mentally not the best approach for you. We can find a better way for you to deal with this rather than going through these self-harming behaviors.
Now, shock is something people can go through too, and this is where sometimes it can really be upon a loved one, as an example, to really be able to jump in there and potentially have to make the decision for someone else that, hey, okay, you can't wait anymore. I got to now act on your behalf to get you to somewhere to get help.
Yeah, and this gets into a place where it's not about recognizing the self-harm or not, but the person is in physical danger. They're in shock. So it's dealing with it like you would in other first aid situations. You're in shock. We need to get you to hospital right away.
Yeah. Again, it can go a long way just for someone to start to just getting help, seeing a counselor, as an example. Is this something that it's important for yourself to just be dealing directly to that individual engaging in the self-harm? Or is there room in there for someone who is just simply showing that, hey, they're concerned for their friend, their family member, or their loved one? How do you approach it in that way?
Well, I approach it that I can work with anyone who is involved in the community. So if it is a parent or a sibling or a friend who is concerned about another person, absolutely, I can meet with you and talk about how do you best help the individual. If it is someone who is engaging in self-harm and wants to change, I can definitely meet with that person one-on-one. If they want to work as a family or as a couple, there's all sorts of kind of groupings that we could have, whether people want to come in by themselves or as a family. We can work with the whole system.
Well, I could just imagine, at least thanks to media, TV, movies, is that a parent is scared out of their mind that, if I put my child to talk to a counselor or someone like that, this is all going to get pinpoint it on me and social service is going to come and take my child away. Like it's unfortunate that people think that way because of what media is presented to them in many different forms. But honestly, it's so important that people realize, no, it's about getting that individual the help they need.
Yeah.
And it's more important that that's taken care of than you having to worry about your own ramifications. You don't want to lose someone altogether just because of what they're going through.
Absolutely. And a lot of people think social services, they just want to take our kids, but they don't. They want to do what's best for the family to grow together. And so then if you are taking your kid to a counselor or to the hospital or something, you're not showing that you're being negligent. You're pursuing help. And social services looks at that and says, you know what? This person is working hard to do the right thing for their family. We're going to help them with that. So if social services does get involved, they're far more likely to say, what else can we help you with? Do you need private counseling? Do you need help with other resources? Hopefully people are starting to be less afraid of social services and seeing them more as a resource instead of a big threat.
Now, as well, for yourself, in terms of the help that you can give someone, obviously, just engaging in conversation, discovering, you know, the root of why someone is doing something like this, giving them alternative, safe options. That goes beyond into that next step of really helping someone to reduce any forms of self-harm. And that can come in many different forms.
Absolutely. Lots of different forms. Like we talked about, some people use an elastic band on their wrist to have that physical focus. There's lots of different things that we do with someone who is, when we're dealing with anxiety or depression, that work with self-harm as well. So things like learning mindfulness, which is things like meditation, focusing on your senses, focusing on the here and now, rather than being in your head and thinking about yesterday or tomorrow. So meditation is a piece, deep breathing is a piece, looking at your five senses, something like holding an ice cube that puts your focus on something physical and it's not bad for you. So it's interesting. If you hold on to an ice cube for as long as you can, the sensations keep on changing, and you experience new things as you're going through. Like if you can hold an ice cube for 10 minutes or something, it's an interesting experience. Should try that one. There's these things about being able to calm your body. And then also we talk a lot about changing your thoughts. So what kind of thoughts are going through your head that are kind of spiraling that negative emotion? And so how do we change that? Are there things like, are you assuming that you know what other people are thinking or what's going to happen in the future, focusing on negative stuff, being demeaning to yourself, all these thoughts? We can work on changing those thoughts too. And then when we can do that, there's less need for the self-harm. There's those pieces, calming the brain, calming the body. And then also when there's trauma, there's specialized therapies that can really help with trauma. So I'm going to throw out some letters and terms to you, but things like EMDR, OEI, these are therapies that are specifically focused to dealing with the trauma. And so then you can go through and kind of recognize the trauma, think about the trauma, but without being overwhelmed by it or feeling like you're right back there again.
And one I think is important as well, too, much like a lot of the things we've talked about, whether it's strategies for parenting or strategies for self-harm, for example, it's not a one-size-fits-all type scenario.
Yeah.
Something's going to work for some. Other
Absolutely.
Things won't work at all for others. It's just really getting at what can work for someone.
Yeah. There's so many different things that can work. So if you feel like, oh, I tried this and it didn't work, don't give up because there's more things. So if deep breathing didn't feel like it worked, well, there's other stuff we can do. For me, like that traditional meditation drives me nuts. I can't stand it. But there's other things that I do that give me the same benefits. So there's so many different things. Don't give up and say, well, I tried it. Not going to try again, but there's more out there for you.
Well, and I think it goes to show too, like we've talked about things that people can do to really deal with the pain or whatever it is they're going through that's causing them to engage in that self-harm. It's oftentimes a case of where it goes too far, that can be the most dangerous for someone. Because in the small doses, something like if it is a drink that can calm someone down, then so be it. Kind of like one Tylenol, for example, right? Like, yeah, that's fine. It's when you talk about like the dozen drinks, that's better. A dozen Tylenol, that's bad. Like,
and I think with a lot of these things, it's not even how much you drink, although how much you drink is important. But if you have one drink to calm yourself or one drink so you can go to sleep, there's better ways to deal with it, because that can lead to, well, one drink's not cutting it anymore.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
So why don't you use alcohol or anything else to calm yourself? Let's find a way to do it without substances, without harmful activities. So that even goes into smoking. Yeah. Some people say, well, I smoke just because it's the only way that calms me. Well, no, we can find other ways that calm you. It's going to be tough, because as you stop smoking, then it will really put these new tools to the test. But yeah, I guess going back to anything that you use to calm yourself, be careful what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. David Disty again on All You Ever Wanted to Know, Heart to Heart, as we talk about self-harm, but also, more importantly, harm reduction. We'll take our final break, but more with David before we wrap things up for today on the program. One final time here on All You Ever Wanted to Know, Heart to Heart, with David Disty again, self-harm, but also harm reduction, our topic of conversation. And David, before we wrap things up today, some just final thoughts.
I really just want to reiterate that a lot of the things that we think of are either self-harm or addiction or other things. It can be, we really need to look at not just the behavior, but what's behind it. So when you find somebody cutting or they've overdosed on medication, it may be a suicide attempt or it may be self-harm. And those are two different things. Likewise, someone in addiction, it may be I don't want to say just addiction, but there may be a self-harm component to it. Someone who is getting into fights a lot or punching things, putting holes in walls, it may be self-harm. So looking at what's behind it, not just the behavior, is a big piece of being aware of and talking about self-harm.
Well, and finding, obviously, more importantly, healthier ways for someone to really deal with whatever it is that is causing them to go to the point of self-harm.
Yeah, because like I said at the beginning, a lot of people who are engaging in self-harm, it's not about a desire to hurt themselves, but it's the only way that they found to take the mental pain and get it out. So we want to find what are different ways that you can get that mental pain out. What are different ways that you can do it? So counseling has a lot of different things that you can do. We can work on meditation, mindfulness, being aware of your body, work on changing your thought patterns and what's kind of contributing to the emotions that you're experiencing. Doing things that are healthy for you, that give you kind of the same chemical response in your body, things like running, sports, whatever it is that kind of that you enjoy, doing those things. So there's a lot of different stuff that we can do to help someone not feel the need to harm themselves. And so don't give up and think, well, I've tried everything. Well, no, there's always more stuff. There's tons of stuff out there that we can do. So keep on trying, keep on working at it.
Well, because there are such harms with someone that's engaging in that behavior. We've talked about the risk of addiction, overdose, trip to the ER for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just so many different things that could be as a result of this sort of thing. And so when we can find a much better way of approaching the situation that life presents us with, the more healthy in the long run we can be, because we're not doing any kind of damage to our body.
Yeah. And like we talked about earlier, anything that you feel, well, I have to do this to calm down. Well, is it something that maybe isn't a good route, whether you take one drink to calm down or to go to sleep at night? Well, there's better ways that we can deal with it. So yeah, lots of different stuff. And it doesn't just have to be about self-harm, but the ways that you're dealing with life stresses, with your emotional world, there's better ways. And I say that for everybody, that there's always stuff that we can do to improve and keep on growing in this way.
Excellent. Well, that's our program for today, unless there's anything else that...
Well, that's a lot. Like you said, it'll be on the website, so go back and there's more in there.
Yeah, or go about approaching David, too, if you want to take the steps as well. Like we talked about, counseling is a great outlet as well for people to get things off their chest, but also in the direction of getting help in whatever it is they encounter on a daily basis or regular basis. And obviously, the more we talk about these things, the more we can all help and love one another too. So, David, thanks so much as always.
Thank you, Jordan.
It's been great. It's All You Ever Wanted to Know on The Rock 98.5. Until next time, have yourself a wonderful day and be blessed.